Have you been exploring your spirituality and learning more about yourself? And now you're ready to take bold, positive action. Are you seeking clarity about what is really blocking you from your greatest potential? Do you feel like you're so close to a breakthrough, but you can't figure out why you continue to feel stuck at the same level? Join us now for Real Talk with Joyce and Jennifer, two transformational coaches who are eager to share all they've learned over the many years they've each been working with clients, helping them create the life they want. Joyce and Jennifer both have extensive, diverse backgrounds in the art of conscious transformation, and they are here to help you. So tune in now for the insight and tools you need to consciously live, work, and play, so that you can live the life you most deeply long to experience.
Hi, Joyce here. Welcome to Real Talk with Joyce and Jennifer. I'm a transformational coach, life purpose facilitator, mind-body teacher who guides clients to live their most joyful, courageous, and authentic life.
Hey everyone, it's Jennifer, and I'm a transformational coach, facilitator, and consultant, which basically means I transform the mentality of leaders so that their entire staff and corporate culture can shift toward higher purpose. But most importantly, I'm a mom.
So let's take a moment before we begin to remember all the 8 people who died and the ones who were injured in New York yesterday in the terrorist attack. You know, it's so hard to know what to say over and over again about the loss of life of people who just happen to be walking or biking and enjoying their life.
Seriously, it's just awful. And these times are pushing us all to learn how to live joyfully and peacefully in spite of this very real sense that something horrible is looming in the background, just ready to take us down. You know, we see so many stories of terrorism. So whether it's Mother Nature or a despicable terrorist like what just happened in New York, the threat is real. We're watching it, we're seeing it, we're living it. And we're being pushed really hard to choose love over fear, especially now during this era of transformation. It's kind of hard to talk about, Joyce.
It is. I feel like we're there every week, and I don't want to be there every week. I don't want to be
I know.
About, you know, like another situation. I want to, but we are, and that's what's real. I mean, that is our reality. And so I think what we're talking about today is going to be really helpful. And it's helpful to me to write it and you to talk about it. So on that note, let's just take a deep breath and let that out and just be with that for a moment, thinking about both souls who've passed over and their families and all the loved ones.
Yeah, and you know, I love to think about how it's so easy. I mean, I don't love to think about this. What am I saying? It's so easy to default to fear and horror and think horrible thoughts. It's natural instincts, but the best thing we can do is be conscious to send loving thoughts to their loved ones. Mm-hmm. That if we're going to think about these tragedies, to use our power energetically to send love.
Absolutely.
It's tough, really tough. So thanks for helping us take that deep breath, Joyce. We talked last week about the importance of breathing. I always laugh when I say that. I'm the one that stresses that. You do it. I stress it. But just remembering to breathe, as silly and simple as that sounds, is a tough one for many. And speaking of last week's show, we had a more intense tone than usual. So, you know, we chose to push you, our listeners, into a commitment to taking care of yourselves in order to build resilience during these tough times. And so hopefully today we're going to have a more loving and nurturing tone because that is what the message of last week was really all about. But we do have to learn how to nurture ourselves in a healthy way in order to survive challenges. But most importantly, if we really want to completely thrive, we just have to do this. And so believe it or not, that is wholly within the realm of possibility for all of us during this crazy era, even though it just doesn't look like it.
Absolutely. So, yes, even, you know, even though that we are living in times that are difficult emotionally, we want more than ever to look at ways our life can really embrace more beauty and happiness. So our big question for today is, what is happiness? We're talking about happiness. So as Jennifer wrote in her synopsis for today that's on the show, much has been written about the subject of happiness, and yet nearly everyone continues to strive for it instead of simply experiencing it. So as any of us know, happiness is not a byproduct of our material lives. It emerges from within. Yet most often human beings continue to seek happiness outside themselves. You know, I thought a lot about the questions, Jennifer, of what makes you happy. And so some of my happiest times are when I'm really with people who I feel really connected with, that get who I am, and I can just be really who I am. And we laugh about silly things we've experienced together in life, and just sort of look at them, accept them. I also remembered a moment when I was teaching in Costa Rica and suddenly became aware of the beauty that surrounded us and how much I love teaching women to become self-empowered so they could make life-altering changes. You know, I also love really simple things that are beautiful and delicious. You know, I think you know how I love lemonade, and I like hiking in the mountains. I like the smell of spring garden with fresh onions. I like looking at the trees outside my window, which I do every single day, and I'm grateful they're there. I even do these silly things like millions of people do, is I watch these stupid cat videos on Facebook and I laugh because they're silly. And sometimes that's what I need to do, is to sit there and have a laugh in the middle of the day and watch kitties and dogs do stupid things. So, and the other thing I like is just creating beauty in my home. I like, you know, that really makes me feel good. You know, so I don't always feel happy, and sometimes I fall into that American dilemma of wondering, what is wrong that I don't feel happy? I'm supposed to be happy. I have so much stuff. So, you know, but these days there's a lot of things going on in the world that do not support me in really feeling happy.
Yeah, you know, Joyce, when you were saying earlier about being friends that you're connected with and laughing and being yourself, it reminded me of how many times you and I have done that. And I honestly, I don't know if our listeners know that, you know, we're not just colleagues. We've been friends for many years. And but because of multiple, you know, reasons, we don't get together as often as we'd probably like. But when we do, you know, we've gotten together many times when we were both going through very difficult times. And what do we always do when we get together? We laugh about it. Yeah. You and I are really famous for looking at each other, dumping our woes, talking about how hard it is. We might shed a tear or two, and then we look at each other and we just start laughing and saying, well, we're being challenged again.
Here we
and
go.
So I think that is right. And I just think that is what is unique and special to really intimate friendships. So, but I get what you're saying about the rest of it too. And I've experienced many similarities in my life. I think for me, I've redefined joy and happiness as words literally differently now than how I used to think about them. So just for the sake of understanding the transformation in my thinking around that, let's just think of it as like I had pre-trauma thinking and then I had post-trauma thinking. And so, you know, I'm just talking about my own perspective here on happiness. But as you all know by now, the listeners, and quite honestly, telling my story is really getting on my nerves. So if it gets on yours, shoot me an email and let me know. But I had about a 7-year stretch of one trauma after the other, which really kind of broke me in a way. And it was a good way for sure, even though at the time it was just horribly painful. But it forced me to detach from an old belief system that kept me in mental and emotional bondage so to speak. So in my pre-trauma thinking, I never even really used the word joy, ever. I thought of it as kind of this old-fashioned word, and I really only related it to the holiday season because it appeared on so many Christmas cards. And so I thought of happy as an emotion that was just awesome, but fleeting. And then post-trauma thinking operates from the belief that happiness is now a base part of my nature. And ever since then, I can experience sadness and tears will fall forcefully down my cheeks sometimes if it's a really difficult moment. And yet, I am certain, even through that moment, that underneath it is a solid foundation of happiness. And joy is now the title I give to those moments when I'm experiencing something that makes me smile or laugh out loud, like my kids doing something goofy, or even like this morning when I got to see a rainbow on my way home after dropping them off at school. Just little things like that warm my heart, and I get this tremendous sense of joy. But I know that even if something bad happened, my happiness hasn't gone away. It's just I'm experiencing the emotion that that bad thing evoked. And that's been a really fundamental difference in my understanding of my own happiness, thanks to all that trauma.
Well, that is a real fundamental shift, and I think I have that. I've experienced that too. It's different, is that you can have emotional moments, even when you cry, but doesn't mean you're not happy. Doesn't mean there's not things you're really happy about. So we'll be right back talking some more about happiness.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive dedicated community.
Have you or someone you love ever experienced a major loss? The kind of loss so cataclysmic that it divided life into before and after. The death of a beloved person or pet, the loss of a job, a health challenge, can leave us feeling empty, lost, alone, wondering if we'll ever feel joy again. Loss is universal. Grief is part of the human condition. But in our modern world, we've lost the ability to understand, share, and integrate our grief. We're expected to grieve privately and quickly get over it. This November 3rd through 5th, the Atlanta Grief and Loss Center will be hosting a retreat that will allow you to fully feel, integrate, and catalyze your grief. Our retreat is called Heartbroken Open, Grief as a Sacred Path to Renewal and Rebirth. If you are grieving, or if you work with clients who are grieving, you'll find more information about this powerful retreat at atlantagriefandlosscenter.com/retreats or call 404-881-1322.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So welcome back. We're going to be talking some more about happiness. So Let's just talk. I'm going to talk about a few of the thoughts from people who actually study and teach happiness. And, you know, happiness is a course in a university now, which never was when I was in college, but it is a big deal. So it has to be meaningful if all these people want to take a course in it that, you know, there are a lot of interest in it. So, you know, we have the default assumption that happiness is a calculus of pleasure and pain. And if you get rid of the pain and you have multiple pleasures, then you'll be happy. But it doesn't really work that way, says Darian McMahon, a history professor of Dartmouth College and author of a book, Happiness, a History. The idea of happiness as our natural state is a peculiar modern condition that puts a tremendous amount of stress on all of us. You know, we blame ourselves and feel guilty and deficient when we're not happy. You know, as it turns out, the notion that we should be able to manifest our own individual happiness is a relatively recent concept in human history, starting really in the 17th century and continuing to develop during the 18th and certainly developing more into the 21st century. So this belief is our own happiness has been a progressive and liberating notion, yet it has a shadow side. To me, it seems as if our whole culture has been living in this shadow zone for some time around the don't worry, be happy concept, or pretend to be happy even when you're not, because we all want to be happy. So what do you think about that, Jennifer?
Right. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, everything that you're saying reminds me of a philosophy of a guy named David Geller. He's here in town in Atlanta. He's a CEO of an investment advisory firm. And I heard him talk a couple years ago. And his big message is about the difference. You know, it's the importance of understanding the difference between pleasure and happiness. And when I heard him say this, I immediately resonated with that message. And of course, I love the fact that he's teaching this as a means to help clients understand how and why they're investing their money. Because when we think about it, I mean, we like to think money is not emotional, but it often, if not always, is. and he, mm-hmm. in his role, he simply reminds us that we often confuse the two, pleasure and happiness. But really think about it. Pleasure is fleeting. It's the feeling you get. You know, for some of us, this is the season where everybody likes these pumpkin spice lattes. I tried one the other day for the first time. I get it. If you're a fan, this is pleasure inducing, you know, or in this era of, you know, all this sexual freedom and it's all over the TV and magazines everywhere. It's like everyone's seeking the perfect orgasm. That's pleasure. For me, mm-hmm. the glass of wine at the end of my day, that's pleasure. Whatever. It's just one simple act that brings a sense of pleasure for that moment. But that's all it is, a moment. So I guess for me, this is not only an important distinction for listeners to make, but it also reflects what I was saying earlier about how, no matter what negative emotion I may be feeling about a situation, I now have a strong sense that my underlying happiness is still there and it's rock solid. The negative emotion, like the positive pleasure, right? But the negative emotion is fleeting. And so, and of course, if it's not, then that's when an intervention's necessary, whether it's a psychiatrist, a psychologist, if it's neural therapy, or if it's, you know, clinical depression. But otherwise, just knowing that negative emotion is fleeting is helpful. But that's just my situation, you know, and I've done a lot of work to undo the impact trauma has had on my brain to ensure it. I've also been teaching and learning these principles for years like you, Joyce, so I'm not asking anyone out there to compare themselves to what I'm saying or what I'm experiencing, mm-hmm. but I am simply recommending that our listeners adopt this belief so that each of you can aspire and then achieve this strong sense within yourself. And, you know, we talked a lot about that last mm-hmm. week, is building strength. That's that resilience. Well, happiness is a strength within you. It can be a foundational platform if you allow it, if you believe in it, if you hone that skill. And we're going to talk a lot about how to do that in today's show. So, Joyce, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So, You know, the question is, are we desperately seeking happiness because we're more unhappy than ever before, despite the many perks of modern life? And I think we might say possibly that we are. And so what are we really talking about when we talk about happiness? You know, clearly, given the recent explosion of bestsellers and smartphones and apps and websites and workshops and TED Talks, online courses, magazine articles, and a slew of research programs dedicated to helping people become happier, it's no idle question. People are interested and want to be happy and are really kind of desperately seeking it. Yet I wonder, are we desperately seeking happiness more than ever before because we're more unhappy than ever before, despite the obvious perks and advantages of our contemporary life? But having brought this into the vision and aspect of it on a fundamental level, we're lonelier than ever. Noting that, you know, we've talked about this before, that an estimated one out of every three people have no one in their life they can really talk to. We're more disconnected from our communities and less able to cooperate, and we're anxious about potential failure. All of these factors are making it much harder to really evaluate happiness. Remember, loneliness is the number one public health issue in the United States. It used to be other things. I mean, when did it shift to loneliness? So these seem to be growing. There seems to be a growing hunger for really a truer, more achievable, and more sustainable happiness that our current overloaded life of stuff and status and achievements is really not bringing to us. What do you think about that?
Right. Well, yeah, I just, gosh, you know, you keep stressing that so much about this modern life and all the benefits and perks we have. It's so true. And it's such this, it's just like a phenomenon. And I think that's why I'm so passionately sharing my perspective, not to shove my story down everyone's throats. Like I said, it gets on my own nerves. But I adopted this view and this sense and this strength when I was in the throes of all of the above, all of the things that are challenging us. You know, I was penniless. I had kids to feed and shelter. I had a sick body. My beloved dog, the only creature on the planet it seemed who wasn't judging me at the time, he died in my arms. You know, my family was four states away, and they were calling to see if I had a mental illness. My ex-husband explained that I couldn't take the kids with me for a month to my family's to recover. And my childhood best friend called to rip me up one side and down the other to condemn me for getting in the situation to begin with. On top of that, my car was breaking down every week. I had no money for repair. You know, I could go on and on and on. And I could sit here and go, woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. And if I had done woe is me, I probably would still be in that situation. And that was 4, 5, 6 years ago. But, you know, thankfully, I find it humorous now, and you and I, Joyce, can laugh about it. It's almost like an old country song. It's so pitiful. But at the time, it was very real. I felt very isolated and extremely terrified. I was in dark despair, and I was faking it for my kids' sake, so I didn't even feel like I could be authentic. My body was screaming for mercy all the while, which meant I couldn't just get up and go fix everything. So it was at this time, exactly at this lowest point in my life, that I finally had a breakdown, which caused a breakthrough. And what I mean by that is I was forced to relinquish control. I think one of the things that, you know, when you talk about this modern life, Joyce, we tend to also think that with all these perks come a sense of control. We can fix everything. If we can't do it, we can spend money to fix it. We can fix it. We can fix it. Whatever. Well, I learned the hard way that that mentality was what I had to let go of. And, you know, I was the most vulnerable I had ever been and hoped to ever be. I had to choose to be mentally and emotionally healthy. And that meant that I had to choose peace and happiness. And I have never been the same since. Thank God. Literally, thank God. And so from that point, my life miraculously and magically began to take a different shape when I made that decision within, when I let go. And Beautiful new friends came out of the woodwork. New work and money flowed in. My body began to heal and so forth. I mean, you can imagine that was the big game changer. And it all came as a result of that shift toward happiness, not because of it. Like, it's not like it all came in and then I became happy. It was, I had to shift to happiness for it to come in. And, you know, we talk about that, but I just experienced it at that really intense level. And I just want to say, when I'm going over all this craziness about my story, Joyce, you were always there for me. So I don't want to paint a picture that I was so completely isolated and nobody loved me. I did have a handful of friends like you who were rock solid through it all. And that made an enormous difference. So anyway,
well, thank
enough
you.
About
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if our listeners would like to want some more information about this, like really take a class, there is a wonderful class on happiness. It's and it's free, and it's out of Greater Good online free course. And it, you know, there, when I was looking at how many people signed up, it was over 100,000 people had signed up since the site's been up. So they must be doing something and giving good information. So If you want more information about happiness, detailed course and homework and lessons and practices, I think that's a great one to do. So I actually have a favorite resource that I've had for years now for when I'm looking for research on happiness. And it's a New York best-selling author, Dan Buettner, in his book, The Blue Zones of Happiness. A lot of people know about the Blue Zones. He's been doing this now probably, I don't know, maybe 10-15 years. He's got 3 books out, and we'll be right back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Depleted by the rat race? Depressed by the attitudes of the human race? The book Honor explains why and how to transform your life from confusion and heartache to one that you most authentically desire. Join Om Times Radio host Jennifer McKenna Weinbaum as she takes you on her journey from her darkest period to her happiest and healthiest life. Entertaining, enlightening, Honor will help you find and maintain the love and light in your own life. Visit www.universalabundance.com to pre-order your copy.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Listen, my life changed because someone was there to get me to use drugs. No one can understand. People think that having someone who will listen makes it better. I need help.
I'm listening.
I need help. I think that having someone who will listen makes it better. People understand. No one can get me to use drugs. My life changed because someone was there to listen.
Go to heretolisten.com for tips and tools to turn addiction around. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. So we're going to talk about some positive information about happiness now. I think we've talked about the reality of happiness and what people believe that beliefs are that are not necessarily true. Like money makes you happy. It helps you be happy when we know basically it helps you to be stable, but it doesn't really make you happy and it doesn't bring you happiness ultimately. So I was saying that Dan Buettner is one of my favorite resources. He's a very positive guy, and he's written several books, one of them, The Blue Zone of Happiness, which is lessons learned from the world's happiest people. So there you go. And he's written another book previously to this one, just called The Blue Zone Solutions, that identifies the healthiest cities around the world where people actually live to be like 90 and 100, and they're still very they're very healthy and active. And I've seen a lot of videos. They're outside cutting their grass, and they're 90. I mean, it's just – it's amazing. And we're going to discuss what it is that really helps people really – engage in happiness and having a happy life. And so some of the cities he identified as Denmark and Costa Rica, Singapore, and Italy, parts of not all over all these cities, but there's segments of them. In Italy, Sardinia, Italy, is the home of the world's longest living men and one of the original Blue Zone areas in the world. It's also the only place in the world where men live as long as women. So Susan Pinkert, a developmental psychologist and journalist and author, wanted to know why this is when she read Dan's research. And she started to notice that as people aged, they were in Sardinia, that they were always surrounded by family and friends and neighbors and friendly strangers. So she did some research on this, and she outlined her discoveries in a TED Talk entitled The Secret of Living Longer Might Be Your Social Life. Very interesting. So that's up there if you want to listen to that some more and get a better understanding. So you would think, now, while diet and exercise and overall health all seem like they'd be the best predictors of how long you live, another researcher, Julian Holt Lundstedt at Brigham Young University, found that the following are the three most important predictors of longevity. Drinking, smoking habits, we know that. Are you a moderate drinker, or do you smoke, or did you stop? When did you stop? The second one is close relationships. And these are your closest friends, the people you can call on a bad day. The friends you know will support you at any time, no matter when you call, around anything. We all need at least one of those friends, because you never know when you're going to have to call them. The third indicator is social integration. These are the interactions with people as you move through your day and include both strong and weak bonds. It could be like the coffee barista you see, you know, on your daily commute, the postman or the woman behind you in the line at the grocery store. If you like to talk, you can connect with those people. People generally will talk to you. So the face-to-face interactions you have on a daily basis are one of the strongest predictors of how long you live. Remember, I said face-to-face interactions, not on Facebook. That does not count. It's really connecting with people, sitting with them, talking with them, having a real life connection. So while the social culture in Italy is engineered to, you know, for close relationships and daily social interactions, the rest of the world has moved further and further away from the village model. This might answer the question as to why women around the globe tend to live longer than men, because women are more likely to prioritize face-to-face relationships than their male counterparts, starving off disease and mental decline. So building a strong tribe isn't it really an easy task sometimes, but living longer could be as simple as striking up a conversation with a person sitting next to you on the bus or at Starbucks. And these are the kind of conversations we're talking about. Every day in your life, do you know who, can you have a conversation with the guy you drop off your laundry to? You know, in the grocery store, do you know these people? Do they say hello to you? Do you have engaged with them, not just walk in and walk out? These actually are important things in your life that you you know, how many interactions do you have during a week? So I counted mine.
There's so much that you just said. Oh my gosh, I was going to say there's so much that you just said that I want to jump on. I mean, it's just, it's like the wow factor. I think about my dad, who's a double amputee, and he's had a hemorrhagic stroke, and he has a shunt in his brain from hydrocephalus, and he's had kidney cancer and lung cancer. And he's just, we literally call him the $6 million man, because we figure probably if we stacked up his medical bills, it would be $6 million at least, but but also because he's pretty bionic. But the bottom line is, he's one of the happiest people I've ever known. And when you describe it this way, I think when we were growing up, I can always remember my mother saying, wherever we went, it would take us longer because, quote, your father doesn't know a stranger. He talked to everybody. And he truly is the one person in my life that I know has probably been through more hardship than anybody and is the happiest of anyone I know. So, you know, so much of what you say, it just resonates so strongly with me. And you know, I write a blog through my Universal Abundance newsletter. And even during that hellish time frame I was describing about my own life earlier, I kept writing. I was capturing it as I was going. It was the one thing I felt like I could do. And so I actually wrote one article on the crucial importance of the village. And you're talking about the village here. And it was that, mm-hmm. that concept was a total game changer for my life. And was the first profound piece of that shift within me that I could see tangibly come to life around me. And one of the key villagers, I'm going to call her, who happened to store my belongings for me at that time, she said something so profound, which is what inspired me to write at the time. She was referring to that village. I call it it's the proverbial village, right? Like, people didn't know they were part of my village. she was referring to it, and she said, she literally said this. She goes, one of the bravest things a person can do is let themselves be loved. And that statement, when she said that to me, stopped me in my tracks. Literally stopped me in my tracks. I felt every square inch of what she was saying in every cell of my being. Because what I realized in that moment is that I had been spiraling out of control, a downward spiral, mind you, in a sea of fear and isolation. Because the more the circumstances got worse, the more fearful I became, the more fearful I became, the more I wanted to be alone. And I became extremely isolated. And when she made that statement, I realized that that's what it was. It was courage. And I had no idea that's what I was exercising. But it was the exercise of courage for me to access my inner resources of peace and happiness. It took courage for me to choose happiness. It took courage for me to allow others to lift me up and provide me with care and compassion, because I was consumed with pride. My pride was broken. It was horrible. I couldn't believe me, the go-getter, the one that made things happen all the time, the rainmaker. It had all fallen apart because I couldn't control any of it. And, you know, pardon me, but just thinking about it brings tears to my eyes, because it was such a powerful moment and it moved me so deeply. And I just didn't take that moment for granted, as you can see in here. And every day since that moment, I have grown stronger emotionally, mentally, and physically. And so I look back and it's almost foreign to look into that memory. It seems like so long ago, but boy, she really nailed it on the head. We have to be courageous enough in our culture. We live in that traditional modern world, Joyce, you described it earlier. We have all these perks, we have all these benefits, and yet our social interaction is on the decline. And you cite all this research that talks about the crucial importance and the correlation to happiness. And I just want to call out to say it takes courage to break your mental habits to reach out. It takes courage to build that village and to use it and access it and activate it. It takes courage to create relationships, create greater intimacy in your relationships. But all of those things have a profound impact on your happiness. Okay, enough about me again.
They sure do. They really do, absolutely. And so I'm actually going to talk about I think these are the points that Dan in the book, all the team brought this together as like the top Power 9 recommendations for happiness. And, you know, this all is taking years. This is not like, going out and just asking people some questionnaires. This is being in villages with all these people and living with them, seeing what they eat, seeing what they do, and really trying to deeply understand what it is that some people seem to have that's working in their life through having these villages, having these deep friendships, keeping them healthy and alive, which is what we want. And the whole idea is for Dan is to bring that information into the rest of the world so that we can learn from that and bring together communities, actually build communities that's modeled on some of those places. So here's some of his recommendations that are really beautiful. But they're very simple but beautiful things. The first one is love someone. Commit to someone who's compatible with you, who shares your interest and values, and whose company you really enjoy. Research shows that you're more likely to be happier if you're married or you're in a committed relationship. And I say in a committed relationship with someone that knows who you are and shares your interest. That's the key in all that to me. The second one is really inner circle. Create a circle of at least three friends with whom you can have a meaningful conversation and who you can call on a bad day for help. For every happy person, according to their research, for every happy person that enters your circle, your happiness level goes up 15%. So you don't want unhappy people around you every day or calling you because it really pulls you down. The third one is, right, we all have those friends who call and bring us down for a minute. It is. So the third one is engage. Join a club, a team, a religious organization, volunteer. Try something new that makes you feel a little uncomfortable. Get out of the box. Curious people engage in activities that make them stretch to reach a higher psychological peaks. And happiness is a byproduct of being fully engaged. The fourth one is learn likability. Some people are born with likabilities. Everybody likes them. They smile and they're happy and everybody wants to be around them. But other people have to learn to do this. And you can learn this skill. It's not like totally just certain people have it. Certain people do have it when they're born, maybe due to their parents. But, I think I had to learn some of this too because I was pretty shy when I was younger. But cultivate, some of the things that make you likable is really generosity and empathy. Be interested and interested and interesting. Learn some social skills. Be positive and learn to give people praise and compliments. I can't tell you how many times I don't do this like intentionally, but I'll just see some woman or man or whoever who looks beautiful in a particular color or has a great looking outfit on. And I just say, you really look beautiful. It's just a simple thing, but people's faces just light up and they say, oh, thank you. Because maybe that's the highlight of their day, that somebody says that to them in the grocery store. So it doesn't take a whole lot to do that. So the fifth one is move naturally. Engage in at least 30 minutes of physical activity that you enjoy. It boosts your mood, increases your endorphins, and increases energy. It enhances your sleep. It lowers your chances of obesity and chronic disease. And it tends to be like a pro-social activity that kind of makes you more interesting because people like people who are physical and exercise. So the sixth one, look forward, focus on meaningful things. Set goals and monitor progress. Most happy people have a purpose. They have a purpose that all those people in those villages, they said they had a purpose. It wasn't complicated. The purpose might be to get up and have a wonderful day and with the people, with their family, and with the village. The seventh is sleep 7+ hours, 7 to 9 hours. Research shows that if you are sleeping less than 6 hours, that you tend to start being unhappy and not feeling very well. And we know that goes much less than 6 hours, down to sometimes 4. And the eighth one is shape your surroundings. Set up your home or office in ways that make you happy. Have a beautiful environment you know, again, not expensive, but a beautiful environment with flowers and pictures and things that you love in your home. And the ninth one is they consider to be absolutely the most critical one. It's called right community. Of all, we'll be right back and I'll finish the ninth one.
The best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. So I'll finish up the recommendations, which they consider to be one of the most important. It's called right community. Of all the things people can do to increase happiness, the most effective is to choose to live in a community that supports well-being. And I totally understand what that means, to be in a community where people know you, talk to you, and are supporting other people being healthy. And it seems like a lot of these things that we've talked about is how we could set up communities in the future that support people to really be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, clearly much of the research draws social conclusions of some sort, whether it's joining organizations, creating the inner circle, giving compliments to others, and like you said, especially choosing the right community. And though we've already talked about how our culture seems to be moving away from this instead of toward it, I do think like you said, Joyce, there's an opportunity here. There's a huge opportunity here for us to turn that ship around and really understand that this is very sound information that we need to take seriously and mm-hmm. consciously reshape our communities to support. And I think we've been witnessing detrimental impact of moving away from it in multiple ways. You know, we now turn to our computers and our phones for social interaction. We watch YouTube videos and engage in social media dialogue all the time, and that's fine. It's fine. It's wonderful. I get great, you know, pleasure from it. But it's just like what you said, Joyce. It's a pleasure. It's you're watching the funny cat videos for that moment.
Yeah.
but these activities, in and of themselves, if that's all we do for social interaction, is very unhealthy. It's catastrophic. You know, when we start replacing good old-fashioned hugs and smiles and face-to-face conversations with all of that, you know, technology, we're getting into big trouble. And, you know, I think it's no secret. Depression's very high right now, high rates of depression, really high rates of antidepressant prescriptions. We see high rates of suicide and homicide and terrorist stories. And we only increase that sense of fear and isolation because if we're on our computers and our phones all day, every day, we're even seeing it more and more and more and more, right? And so we must always remember the fundamentals. What we focus on expands, literally. Oprah says it all the time. It's just a fundamental truth. And so what we give our attention to becomes our lives. So how can we discover any level of sustainable happiness if we continue to hole up in our home office and take all this data of suicide and depression and homicide in all day, every day without engaging meaningfully with others? We can't. And that's a choice. So we have to be really conscious that that's a choice. As completely obnoxious and callous as that may sound for me to say, it's really true. We make a choice every moment. We choose our perspective, we choose our beliefs, we choose our actions and our activities, we choose our relationships. You know, if any or all of the above incite negative emotions, if we have beliefs that incite negative emotions, if we're just so caught up in judging others to a negative point of passion, well, that ultimately becomes our life. And how ugly and nasty is that? So I hope that of all the takeaway messages today, this one causes listeners to pay more attention out there to your unconscious choices and then to begin to consciously make better ones. Move toward all these things that Joyce has shared, these ways to increase your happy factor, to really just become more conscious of those and move in that direction.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to say there actually are some places in the United States that have they consider to be happy cities. So some of them are Colorado, California, Virginia. And so we have a start. We have some cities that are becoming sustainable and are trying to build the model around this. So there are people out there. There are city planners who understand why we need these things. So what metrics are universal to the happiest places in the country? So this is sort of a description of what somebody feels, what their city would be, what makes them happy within their city. So in the happiest places, residents have trust in their police and neighborhood. Now that's different. In their police, their neighbors, and local government. They have good walkable and people-friendly design, sidewalks and safe streets, access to nature, parks, open spaces, trees, civic engagement, clean environments, access to affordable dental care, access to healthy food, and high rates of healthy behavior. Restrictions on smoking, less drug abuse, less obesity.
Powerful list again. You know, you're just really bringing it today, Joyce. You know, citing the attributes that comprise the happiest places in the United States. Think about that. The United States, otherwise known as the free world, the modern westernized country, the home of the American dream, that place where, you know, wealth tends to be misconstrued as prosperity. And why do I say that? Because we all know by now that financial wealth is not the magic bullet to prospering in all facets of our lives. It simply makes material solutions easier to access. It also means that you can be really comfortable in your luxurious physical environment, even when you're swimming in a sea of depression. But really, the happiest places here probably have a lot in common with many countries and cities around the world that are really happy places. And so, you know, that list, again, is so, so great. The residents have trust in their community leaders. There is good walkability, they have access to nature, there's civic engagement, clean environment, access to affordable dental care, access to healthy food, high rates of healthy behavior. I'm sorry to be redundant, but I just loved your list, Joyce. I guess to the listeners, I would say just think about that as you consider your own community. Instead of judging the community negatively, consider how you might change your perspective about it, how you might start engaging in civic activities and inspire your friends to do the same. There's groups out there right now that I'm just like, there's these groups of women that are so moved by the political landscape. They're doing amazing civic work. It's so inspirational. But, you know, you can proactively shape your community. And think about whether or not you engage in healthy behaviors on your own. And if not, what would it take to change those behaviors? Give it some conscious thought. And, you know, for some of you, you may look at that list and you may consider moving.
It might be me.
And that's, you know, doesn't worry. Right. Hey, listen, if the men live as long as the women, since we're both single, Joyce, maybe we should go to Italy.
Sardinia, here we come.
Exactly. Blue zones, beware. We're on our way.
Blue zones.
Anyway.
So.
I think we're about to wrap up here.
So that is a great. We are. So it was really a great discussion today. Let's begin to wrap up by going back over what we talked about, Jennifer. And I started with our. We started with our own personal reflections on happiness, recognizing the differences between falling prey to external influences and building a solid internal foundation of happiness.
Yep, and we touched on the differences between happiness and joy, happiness and pleasure, and the correlation between happiness and longevity and happiness and community. So we've enjoyed this talk today. We hope you'll tune in next week. Follow us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at joyceandjennifer.com.
Mm-hmm. And next week, we'll be talking about forgiveness, the master healer. Until then, be well.
Yes, thank you. We look forward to next week.